DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
Welcome to Not Another Podcast. I am James.
I'm Dan.
And I am Bryce. We're all going to talk at the same time.
Yes! All over one another.
So professional.
Top tier.
So professional. So, I was thinking, after last week's episode, when we ended talking about Samantha and her upcoming play, it got me thinking to about what a creative group we have on this podcast. Sam writes plays, she does YouTube's videos. You wrote a book, Samantha.
Yes, and the second one is coming out soon.
She's like a published author.
Wow.
I'm an official Goodreads author too.
Nice.
Well
so
done.
You can like follow me and shit, but I don't. I haven't like said anything on it yet.
Danny and I both play music. I write occasionally. Dan, you work with wood and
yeah.
Make stuff pretty. And Bryce. So yeah, we've got a pretty.
what a dick.
Oh, sorry, Bryce.
I love you, Bryce. You know that.
Yeah, fuck you. No.
Just like, hear like a click, brr.
And that was the last we ever heard of him.
Warming up the fax machine.
No, actually, Bryce is actually a creative thinker.
Aye.
And yeah. That, honestly, I think requires more talent than most things.
Well, and on top of that, he's also a musician.
Yes, he is.
So, I mean, he does have that going for him, which is nice.
He created human life.
That puts one over on everyone
pretty,
but Jim.
Everyone else on the show except for Jim.
Jim beat you to it, but only by a little.
But it got me thinking about the creative process, and I thought it would be interesting to sit down. I'm sure we've talked about this before, but talk about the different ways that we all get our creativity out. Like, what strikes you? Where did the ideas come from? I know, Samantha, you work with just a ton of creative people, so
yeah.
Ideas are bouncing around constantly.
Yeah, it's a lot. Sometimes it can be a little overwhelming. There's like 20 of us in Radio Hour, and we're actually the owner, myself, and another one of our main writing contributors. We're all, the three of us are going to sit down and start hashing out like the next leg of one of our segments called Daniel Kravitz Chosen One. It's like a Buffy-esque, disgruntled employee as the Chosen One, and he hates it so much.
Nice.
He's so mad that he is inconvenienced.
Oh, can I help you, the Chosen One?
He's so pissed off about it. And the guy who plays it is just the perfect person because he's disgruntled anyway. So it's just like basically his personality.
It helps to live the character.
Yeah. So yeah, he is the character. It was actually written specifically for him, around him playing it. So it works out well. But we just finished like a big volume of that where they took down the big bad that we've been leading towards the last few seasons. So now it's a question of what's next for Daniel Kravitz. So, we're going to sit down and hash that out.
Well, I think it'd be funny if he was like, okay, I took down the big bad. I can go back to my normal life. And then another big bad comes up and he's just even more pissed off.
Fuck!
I just did this!
Right.
God damn it.
One of the things that I wanted to do, and this stemmed from the troll that that was bothering me. And
oh, we love the troll.
I was thinking of him, like his only employee is like, Daniel Kravitz, we need to get into the 21st century and upgrade everything to digital, and we'll have internet in the shop now. And it's like an oddity shop, antiques and all that. So then there's some sort of, you know, voodoo or wizard spell or whatever that pulls them into the internet. Now they have to fight the internet rules.
Fair enough.
I kind of like it.
But that's my idea so far, and I'm excited to pitch it, but I don't think that'll encompass a whole season. That's more like a 6-episode arc.
Nice. I can dig that.
I'll listen.
Right?
Well, do you listen now?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good, good. Right answer.
Just for you, Sam. Besides, I would not want to incur the wrath of Menstrata.
Oh, God, no.
Nope.
We know better.
She's flowing to your town.
For 1 week out of the month.
It's a wild ride. Woo!
Load up on chocolate.
Dude. I was just going to say that.
Bryce, what about you? How do you, when the creative bug strikes?
That's a good question. I probably don't do what I would like to. I thought about writing a book, but I just haven't really felt like I should.
Oh, you always should.
Por qué?
Even if just for yourself.
Yeah, fuck publishers. I mean, just...
No, totally.
Do it to get it out there just for shits and giggles. I mean, even if... It goes
even if no one
nowhere.
Reads it, you can sit down and go, you know, a couple years from now, when, you know, after it's finished and stuff, you can go back and reread it and go, this is pretty good.
God,
I probably should have done
it. Terrible.
Or, yeah, that sucked. I mean,
what
I was
the fuck was I drinking?
Harry was trying to, you know, boost his ego, but fuck no, he wants none of that.
Well, I'm curious, Bryce, when was the last time you played music?
It's been a while.
What instrument?
I have a guitar and I have a bass.
He's a dirty, dirty bass player.
I was actually thinking about if he could. His schedule just does not match ours, but getting him out to kind of sit in for our bass player who's kind of suffering health issues.
You want to come back out to Herkimer, Bryce? He came out one time. I was trying to talk him into joining, and... Aside from the fact that I couldn't really tell how into it you were, but more so than that, I think at that point we were still kind of a hot mess of random acts of music. And and then your schedule
and
changed.
And then my
and
schedule changed,
We're less hot mess and just more mess now.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. These last couple of months have been brutal, but yeah.
But I'm hoping we're coming out of that. We'll see.
Me too.
What about you, Dan? When the I want to get back to Bryce. What was your book about? What was the idea?
Dude, seriously, yeah.
It was a sci-fi book that I was kind of.
Can you narrow it down?
I had kind of written a little bit. I don't know, a couple years ago, like maybe a page worth of stuff, and then I had kind of some ideas about what the story was going to be.
Was this more like actual sci-fi or like fantasy? Because I know your book tastes tend to lean... Yeah, you lean more towards fantasy.
Yeah.
Fantasy nerds, ho. So what, pray tell, was your outline, good sir?
Yeah, what was the story?
I don't know if I want to give up the whole premise. That way someone else doesn't come and steal it like one of you guys.
No, dude, everything on this is copyright, so...
Yeah, you said it out loud. There is proof that it's yours.
Exactly, yeah, dude. So if someone
so
actually listened
now.
To this and came up with the idea... You could actually pull this audio and
this.
Go...
Yeah, get some money.
Yeah.
Get some money out of it without doing any work.
Technically speaking, it does work that way.
It really does.
I know.
This is public record that, you know...
What pisses me off is when I have a really good idea and somebody else doesn't, it's like, fuck, I wish I had recorded that.
I should have come up with that sooner. Or said something.
Seriously.
So, basically the premise was... there was, I guess he's a prince who becomes a king, that his family rules the entire planet that they're on, and he kills his parents for the people because they're turning into basically dictators, like horrible, enslaving dictators.
So what we're living through now.
And he's betrayed by the people that he helps, and he loses his memory.
All right.
Okay.
So it's kind of a struggle to figure out who he is and kind of get back to where he needs to be.
So would this story like start with him like waking up somewhere, just completely lost?
Or would it start before he blinks the hell out?
Yeah, I had it kind of as a, I guess a biography kind of maybe. I don't know. It's basically it starts out with him telling his story.
Okay. All an interview with a vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yep. So.
I kind of wish you would write the book. Seriously, I kind of like the premise. I'd like to see what would happen with it.
Well, and I'm curious to see your writing style, too.
Yeah.
Just as your principal, it's like having Steve around, you know, our lead singer for the band. I got to read a lot of his stuff, and you can really get a feel for, like, a person's style and where they're coming from through what mm-hmm. they write. So I'm kind of curious to see what you'd have to put down there, Biggin.
See, I think Bryce would do well in, like, a... kind of like an idea think tank where, you know, he comes up with the ideas and gives them out and then people go on and write the stories and stuff like that. I think you do really well because just for as long as you and I, the longest running members of the show, as long as the two of us have been together, Bryce has had some really fucking amazing ideas. What was it? The computer that on your way home, you could text your computer and when you get home, there's a burger waiting.
Oh, like the automatic food cooker?
The iBurger, yeah. I think is what we call it.
Awesome.
That was Bryce's idea. It was genius. Dan,
you invented
what about you?
Grubhub before it was a thing.
Yeah, kind of.
Me? I don't know. Most of the time, it's like the creative bug never really kind of leaves. It's just one of those things where I either have time to do something about it or I don't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, for me, what I'll do is, like, the creative juices start flowing when I watch something that interests me. Whether it's, you know, a documentary about something that, you know, is fascinating to me, or it's a comedy show that cracks me up. Why does it crack me up? And then I'll start putting that into it as well. But a lot of what I put into it, or a lot of what I get from it, I put into music. So I got a lot of goofy, silly fucking riffs, and then I got blues riffs that came out of watching a blues documentary. Demons of Dirt and Sand was born out of watching the Dust Bowl documentary. A lot of the other, like, music that I've written just kind of comes out of whatever I'm paying attention to, what's caught my fancy. And the only other case scenario where, you know, lightning has struck me really well was based out of mood. You know, it's like I play what I feel. If it sounds good, cool. If it doesn't, I scrap it and try something else. And I do that shit all the time when I have time to do it. As far as like guitar, you know, builds and stuff like that, most of the time I just think about would it to me look cool playing it live? You know, being up on stage and having this rig in my hands, would it look cool to me in the audience, watching somebody else play my guitar? And then I just start shooting ideas. I mean, granted, a lot of them are kind of generic in the respects that, you know, my, the explorer body that I want to do in Egyptian hieroglyphs, I'm certain 100 people have done something similar. The way that I want to do it, I haven't seen it yet, but it's something that, you know, is very close to me. You know, I love the Egyptian history, you know. As well as a Japanese scroll with, you know, the Mayumaso tattooed onto the side on an Iceman. I love that setup. I think that would make for a really cool design. And just stuff like that, you know, I mean, that's usually where it comes out of. I think of a guitar body or a shape that I want to work with, and then it's like, okay, how would I make that look cooler? And, yeah, again, all of them, they look either cool or funny to me. My red-green guitar is still something I need to do. You know, duct tape and plaid. Just because, again, it would be fun, and I think that's my favorite part about trying to be creative is just having fun with it, because I don't honestly think it'll go anywhere, and I don't believe anybody will be like, oh my god, you're Danny Hatem, no way, Nobody's ever going to say that shit to me, ever. But it's going to be fun.
Well, not now.
Well, no. I've been on this show, like, way too much. Not ever going to happen in my life, bro.
But, no, it's going to be like, oh, you're...
you're that guy. Okay. Sorry?
I thought you were cool.
Wah, wah. But that's just it. It's like, I know that none of the stuff that I'm doing will probably ever go anywhere, which makes it... It takes all the pressure off of it. You know, I don't have to be creative for a job. I don't have to be creative to make a living. I get to be creative because it's fun. And whatever comes of it, comes of it. And if nothing comes of it, who gives a shit?
Well, let me pose this question to you creative types. Where do you find you get the most ideas? Like, where are you? When are you? I mean...
Music. Always.
Yeah, listening to music.
Hmm. Yeah.
We do a writing, like I've done writing exercises where we would listen to a song and then you have 10 minutes to crank out like a flash fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most of my ideas come from, like, there is a book that I would like to write, and that came from just, I was walking my dog and I didn't have any music in my ears. I was just, it was just me and the dog. It was night. And I sort of had this vision of tongues being ripped out of some, like ripping themselves out of someone's mouth. And the image just never left me.
Yeah, so you told us about that one.
Yeah, and then I start.
Why do I not remember this?
Because you have terrible memory. And obviously you weren't listening.
I don't know what you're talking about. By the way, who are you and how did you get in here?
No, I remember you bringing that up.
My best ideas. Or what I think are my best ideas come from when I'm not actively pursuing them. And then it's a matter of actively pursuing them after you have that initial brain.
So let me, as a follow-up, how do you go about developing your idea into a...
more than a random
kind of a tangible
picture.
Thing?
Yeah. Well, with like, the tongues...
always about the tongues.
There's the name of the episode.
About the tongues.
With the tongues.
You start thinking about what type of character would cause that to happen. I like character-driven stories. I like interplay between characters. So I was like, why would that happen to someone? So I start thinking of the person that would cause that to happen. And then I offshoot from there. To bring a bigger story. I don't outline. I just start trying to get it on paper. If it's getting too big in my head, then I'll start putting down bullet points. But I try to, because Stephen King famously says, keeping a writer's notebook is the best way to encapsulate your worst ideas. And that your best ideas are the ones that stick with you, even without writing them down. So I like that, but then things get too big in my head. Like, I'll put the whole story in my head, and I'm like, I just need to get it out. So, yeah.
See, I'm the same way. I've been sitting on an idea for a book for going on 5 years, and I really should just sit down and write it.
Yeah, you should.
And I've actually got some written. And I've actually got a treatment because I was going to put together a treatment and see if I could sell it.
Yeah, I remember you were going to pitch it.
But and I didn't make it, unfortunately.
Well, that's dangerous, though, because a lot of productions will not take a treatment or a pitch unless you're already an established writer. You need the full manuscript.
No, there was actually an opportunity where I forget which movie company here. But it was at Wizard World Fest, like back in April?
Yeah, something like that. It wasn't that long ago.
I think it was Paramount, actually. They were having an open call for, like, you could take your idea and pitch it.
Yeah.
Like, they were, and if they bought it, you'd get, like, a pretty decent paycheck for it.
Well, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, and I'm not saying that that's not a great way to try to get yourself in there. I'm just saying that's.
Well, see, I actually went and I did some research. There are ways that even if you're not established, you can still get your idea done. It takes a lot more effort and patience, but it's doable. But no, you're right. I mean, they tend to look at established people first.
It's just risk versus reward.
Well, in all honesty, I think the idea, like, I don't really want to let go of it, give up creative control. So I think, honestly, I just need to write the book and then see what happens.
That's fair.
But again, it's like you, Samantha. It's an idea that's just lingered and grown and here's a question. When you have an idea, how do you visualize it? Because Samantha, Bryce, you guys write, I write. I would imagine musically you just hear it.
Well, no, actually, it's kind of weird for me because when I have an idea for a song, my mind does a very, very long, weird process where I'll paint a scene. I'll see an image in my head, something going on. And for me, it's almost like soundtracking. It's like, okay, so I know what I want to get across. This is the actions I see happening. How do I want to basically soundtrack this? What would I put to it to give emphasis to it? You know, to really get those points to stick. And the cool part about it is I end up coming up with some really neat riffs or these really neat song ideas, and that's about usually where it stays until I shop it to the boys, and, you know, Steve will pop out with some lyrics that are completely off the fucking rails. I mean, like, for him and I, the very first song that him and I came up with that has stuck around was Lucky Sevens. And he showed me his lyrics for it, and I started painting this image, and it's like, okay, yeah. And I started just soundtracking it. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what could I possibly hear for somebody like driving into Vegas or something like that, just on a hellbender kind of weekend, just ready to fucking lose all their money and just have a great time doing it, or maybe strike it rich and walk away, you know, the best. And that's when I came up with my original riff for it, which has persisted all the way till now. And that's kind of how I process things. I visualize it in a sense of like watching a movie of the scene I want to paint. Demons of Dirt and Sand, same concept. I basically cut and pasted the image of that big dust storm and the mummy coming over and his face coming out of the sand, you know? Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, swap that out for a giant black cloud all over the fucking Midwest, have multiple faces of these monsters coming through, and the only thing that shows really is, like, their eyes. And I came up with this stupid fucking riff that sounded like something you'd hear, you know, from somebody down on their luck, which is actually the ending riff. That da-da-dun-dun-dun-dun. Mm-hmm. And I started playing that through, and I had it for, like, I don't know, probably about 3 or 4 weeks, and then I started getting together with the boys, and we were sitting in the room. We were, you know, probably about an hour away from wrapping up the night. We'd all had a couple of beers, and I grabbed that riff on a drop tune, and I was like, huh, I wonder what would happen if I did this. Dun, 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 dun. I was like, ooh, that's cool. I started playing with that, and Sean bust out of the bathroom, came downstairs, dude, that is fucking metal. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that's just what I need to do then.
I guess that's metal.
Okay. But, you know, and I built off of it from there, and, you know, having everybody else around me, you know, to help me build on it. You know, Sean started hitting a drum beat. Dan chimed in with the bass. Steve knew the lyrics that I'd written out for it originally, and he just started working them through, seeing how they were going to fit. And, yeah, that's how shit gets worked out.
You're boring, Bryce.
I know. I'm sorry, Bryce. I hear the yawns. It's okay, buddy.
But, Samantha, Bryce, you guys, as writers, how do you visualize your story? Is it, because for me, like, it's always a movie in my head.
Yeah, I think that's usually what mine is, too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm much like that, too.
I like to see it as a visual medium first, and then you try and jot it down or take it down.
See, I don't get to talk with many writers, so, like, I don't know their process. All
right.
But for me, it's always, like, whenever I write, I kind of watch the movie in my head and write what I see there.
Exactly. What's going on? You almost write a screenplay before you write a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to see my characters. I'm very deliberate with how they, so when I come up with a character, like, this character would do this type of thing. I'll hit up like Pinterest or something like that, and I'll look up concept art for characters or models, and because I want to see the person who fits. That helps me write that person better, you know. So I always visualize it, and I like to name my characters, and I name them very, I'm a big dork. I name them very deliberately. A lot of times the name is going to have some sort of seed as to what is happening in the story.
Dork.
I'm a massive dork. I'm naming characters.
You're amidst friends.
But Bryce, I spend a lot of time with them in my head.
I think as a writer, you
almost have
them.
To.
Yeah.
You have to have a better, firm understanding
you
of
have
what kind
to,
of creature
you're dealing
with. I think
you really have to know and understand your characters before you can write them, because otherwise someone reading it is not going to know. Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, the four characters I have for my story, like, two of them I know extremely well. Like, I can tell you, like, their entire, like, upbringing and childhood. Two of them I'm still not, like, really sure of yet, but like I've got a really good sense. See, I tend to base my characters on characteristics of people I know,
which is weird because honestly, like the one time I've ever tried to write, I had a fucking horrendous nightmare and I woke up and I started writing down the idea. Well, I got about two pages into this story concept, and what I came to understand, what's that?
It was Freddy Krueger.
Oh, totally.
Oh, this has been done.
Well,
fuck.
Well, I kind of gave up because I came to a kind of a mental roadblock where I didn't quite know how to continue the story. It's like I was missing about a page worth of information to segue me into the next section, and I just didn't know how to transition it. But the thing I came to realize about it is all the characters in my story essentially were just me. I mean, there's parts of my psyche that really, really are, you know, horrendous creatures. I know there's a part of me that could understand the
bastard.
Nature.
There's no...
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. But my main character was how I imagined myself having survived something horrendous and now in an even worse situation and just not giving a flying fuck anymore.
See, I think that's the case for most writers. A lot of main characters are just extensions of the writer.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yep, 100%.
And that's where I think my problem was, is everybody was basically just me. So the logic was there, but the rationale and the reasoning behind their motives were completely different. But in essence, it's still the same character. And it's like, yeah. Again, it was fun to write, but at this point in time, it's not going to be the bane of my existence to finish it. It's going to be one of those days where I'm just going to be sitting around, and, whoo, well, that could work. And I just start going in.
And that's where the work comes in, right? It's one of those, inspiration only takes you so far, and the rest of it is grind.
Which is weird because it's like when I was in high school, I used to do a lot of writing and just storytelling of sorts. I found that one of my big issues I had was getting past my initial segues. It's like I had a great intro and I had a great fat of the story and I had a great ending. But getting from the intro to the fat of the story was always a big ass roadblock for me. So a lot of the times I just flubbed it in high school just to kind of get past. But once I got past, oh my God, I fucking exploded, and I would be writing for
really
days.
Transitions are really hard for me as well.
Yeah, but after that, it's like every other transition into every other aspect of the story, it was like it was already mapped out. It's just that one always stumps me. And now that I'm an adult that doesn't have to pine for a grade, I just don't try that hard.
Samantha, how do you deal, in your stories, how do you deal with exposition?
Well, a lot of the stories that I write are flash fiction, so they're 1,000 words or less.
Mm-hmm.
So you really want to take advantage of the little time you have. So I don't like to spend a lot of time on these big blocks of exposition, which probably hurts me in the long run with bigger stories. when I do something that's more like a short story or more 13,000 words. But I'm a big fan of show, don't tell. And I am also a fan of you don't have to tell the audience every single little detail of the before and after the story. Just tell this part of the story. And they're going to fill in the blanks from there. So you're creating a relationship with the person who's reading it because you trust them to fill in, you know, for what, I don't know if that makes sense. And they're trusting you to give, the audience is trusting you, the writer, to give them enough information to feel fulfilled.
Well, and I have a question for Sam, James, and Bryce. One of the things that tends to bug me the most in storytelling, because I love short stories in general, how do you guys feel about the Lovecraftian thing that cannot be explained, horror beyond reason? Kind of, in my opinion, a weak-ass explanation of a giant monster, usually. Or something that just...
Example. Give me an example of one that you think is...
Rats in the Walls. So, one of my favorite H.P. Lovecraft stories that he has, he's talking about this guy building or rebuilding this old castle, you know, and living in it, and every night he hears scratches on the walls. Cut a long story short, he finds a trap door, he goes down inside, and there's this giant chasm that is loaded with, as I say, an unimaginable amount of horrors amidst all the walls. Now, upon reading this story twice, I've come to understand that the cavern is literally walled to ceiling rats and corpses of previous dead feasts, but also this unimaginable sized army of rats that live beneath this castle and have for centuries. But that was basically all he left me with, was an unimaginable horror scene. And I always felt like that was kind of relying too strongly on the reader to come up with the punchline of the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There comes a point.
It's definitely a delicate balance.
There is, but it's lazy writing at the same time.
That's how I feel about it.
I can see that.
I mean, Cthulhu was referred to as the thing that should not be. It's like, oh, fucking thanks.
Well, you're leaving a lot up to the audience because it's up to them. Like Samantha said, it's up to them to kind of fill in the blanks. But an unimaginable horror...
You have to give them enough to feel comfortable.
Right.
And if you're just leaving them with unimaginable horror, then if I can't imagine it, it's not a horror.
Ta-da! That's how I feel about it. But again, it's like I love reading stuff like, you know, Creepypasta, where, you know, a 10-minute long story delivers you a setup, a duress, and a punchline. And I love that setup because although it is a short story and I know it's meant to be, and I know there's always going to be some, you know, what the twist at the end of it, I love it when you come with the monster's description, even if it's just, you know, tall, lengthy, and had no face. I can imagine something that would terrify me with no face. But if you just say it's an unimaginable horror, it's like, well, fuck you.
Yeah, that's a cheat.
If the writer can't imagine it, how is the reader expected to imagine
exactly. And that's why I wanted to pose it to the three of you, because it's like I wanted to know how you guys felt about it. Bryce, I think you and James might have been the only other people I know who have ever read Lovecraft.
Yeah, I've read it.
Sam? Mm-hmm.
It's been several years since I have read Lovecraft, but I have in the past. My boyfriend actually just got done reading his entire works.
Ooh.
So. See, I find
a slog.
As much as I admire Lovecraft, because he really is one of the...
He was ahead of his time, for sure.
Ahead of his time, but also kind of one of the big names when it comes to horror writing.
True. I feel like he fell back on mental illness a little too much. Yeah, he fell back into mental illness a little too much. And I get it. You write what you know, but there comes a point where it's like everybody you know in this story has gone insane because of the unimaginable horror that they have beheld. It's like, well, okay.
You have to look at the time period that he was writing as well.
Well, of course.
It's a time where not as many people could read. It was also a time where not as many people were as sophisticated. They didn't need the details. Whereas now we're so desensitized, desensitized and lazy. So we want everything spelled out.
To some degree.
Well, yes. Because you have your mentally active reader that wants to be able to imagine it. And then you have, you know, your lazy, more casual readers, which being casual and lazy, I'm not saying lazy is like a negative term, but just your casual reader, yeah. Not lazy. So your casual reader wants it a little more bubblegummy and a little more spelled out for them. And that's fine. But when you look at the time period that he's writing, a lot of religion, heavy, you know, heavy stuff, big questions that just even, like, nothing caught up to those answers yet.
Well, so, it's also an age of discovery. Yeah. Like, this is a big age of discovery. Yeah. And it's reflected in his writing.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, with everything scientifically that they discovered, it opened up so many more questions.
Because
so
Lovecraft
for him,
was around during Victorian era, wasn't he? Like the late 1800s, early 1900s?
That's actually more industrial age.
Well, Queen Victoria died in 1902. What? So everything prior to that is considered the Victorian age.
1890 to 1937.
Thank you. So yes, kind of. Kind of.
Actually, kind of both then, which would make sense because, again, industrial age, age of discovery.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, they were learning a lot, and we were exploring our world more, which is why you get Call of Cthulhu and At the Mountains of Madness.
At the Mountains of Madness.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But it was also a time, and that's why you get stories. I'm totally blanking on it. But it is essentially the story that became Reanimator. Herbert West.
Oh, yes. I think he ripped off, like, The Strange Case of Herbert West or something like that, or maybe it's A Peculiar Case.
The movie Reanimator is straight up the case of Herbert West.
I actually think it got renamed to Reanimator, actually. His collected works as
but
Reanimator.
It's essentially kind of this whole medical, it's kind of an offshoot of Frankenstein.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, you want to get down to it, Lovecraft ripped off Mary Shelley.
Well, who hadn't? But Bryce, what do you think about H.P. Lovecraft?
When did Edgar Allan Poe write in relation to Mary Shelley and Lovecraft?
Poe was back in
Poe was early 18. He was around.
I think
when
he was mid 1800s.
He was around when Abraham Lincoln was president.
1809 to 1849.
I'm just gonna wait for Bryce to give me the right answer.
Yeah,
there it is. So yeah, early to mid.
Okay.
We should make. I just thought of this. Creative. We should make an app that's like Siri, but it's Bryce. Like, ask Bryce.
Hey, Bryce. When did Edgar Allan Poe live?
And Mary Shelley was 1797 to 1851.
Yeah. Wow. She outlived Poe. Brownie points.
Because she's a woman.
Well, that and she was just better.
Yeah.
Sorry to all the Poe fans out there.
She was better. Hey, since Bryce is looking it up, did Mary Shelley write anything besides
Frankenstein? I think she did, but none of it ever met with any notoriety, as far as I know.
Because that's the only thing I know her from. Like,
that was kind of her masterworks.
She just wrote, and I'm like, I'm out.
List of works by Mary Shelley.
Hit us with it, B.
Frankenstein. Valpelgra, or The Life and Adventure of Castacuro, The Last Man.
That sounds awesome.
The Fortunes of Perkin Warbeck, which looks like it's a romance.
Ooh. Something to
he
snuggle
said,
up
you're
with.
A woman, you should write about womany things.
Menstrata!
Faulkner, Mathilda.
Sounds like Mathilda. He had a lift labeler on. Mathilda.
It's probably just the way I'm reading.
I know
the titles.
I'm making fun of you, Bryce.
Wait. Lidor. She wrote Mathilda?
No, Mathilda.
M A T H.
Bryce is gonna punch you right in the left testicle.
It's all right. I'm partial to the right anyway.
Now he's going to punch you.
But anyway, I was asking Bryce, what do you feel, you know, having tried your hand at writing or have a desire to move forward with writing, how do you feel about H.P. Lovecraft's, in my opinion, weak-ass excuse for punchlines?
it's been a long time since I read his work. I like the idea of leaving some of, like, especially with a horror novel or horror genre in general, I like the idea of leaving some of it up to the imagination of the reader, but I don't like the idea of just leaving it all to them.
Right.
Yeah.
See, and I agree with
that. You're creating this world. It's yours. And
yeah, it's still yours to direct.
Yeah. And you want to make them immersed in it enough that when you get to the scary part or whatever, you can scare them with something that they can actually imagine.
Right. And you see, that's where I think my jump off point is for that, is it's like with Lovecraft's, you know, kind of weak excuse for description on his creatures, I think most readers who read any kind of horror genre in general, you know, we tend to paint pictures for ourselves anyway. You know, we set up our own settings. I mean, the writer might have had a certain type of house in mind, you know, where the main characters grew up, and that's something to build on. But they at least describe it enough to give you better bearings on what it should look like, you know. And I think that's my big issue that I have with stuff like that, with lazy writing, in my opinion, is they're not giving you enough to jump off of them. They're mm-hmm. kind of half-assing it and saying, okay, well, it's just something so terrible, you just couldn't even believe it. It's like, well, you, then I won't believe it, and I can't follow your fucking story anymore.
Well, here's the thing.
But if you say it's a jet black creature crawling towards you, it's like your mind can go a fucking million directions from there. It's like,
yeah, just give him a kernel.
Yes, yeah, something. Give me something.
Yeah, if you're doing, yep. Especially with horror, there comes a point in any story that you write that you have to take in the reader's imagination, but you have to paint enough of a picture that they can follow. So just sticking with the world of horror, for instance, if you're doing
something that
involves some sort of creature or demon, you have to describe it enough that the reader can get enough of a picture and then fill in the blanks. I mean, you don't have to get down to like every crack in fangs or, you know, whatever. But
like impressions is enough. You know, like at first glance, what do you see about something? It's like, if you gave me just like your top five things you saw when you first saw this creature, that's all we need. Hell, I can work with three. Hell, I can work with two. A grin that goes beyond the sides of his face, and his eyes are distorted in a pale black hue. It's like, fucking perfect. I can build off of that.
Yeah.
And that's enough to get, you know, your dander up, to make you kind of feel a little uneasy. And it's like, but when you just, you leave too much up to the reader, we're dumb.
Well, and I think that goes to world building. Different genres, I think, require more out of the writer to build that world. So, for instance, sci-fi and fantasy.
Oh, God,
you're talking
about
complete unknowns. You have to really get down mm-hmm. to describe stuff for the reader to imagine. And I think it also depends on the world. Like, okay, take for instance Dune. Everyone knows what a desert is.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have to do a lot of description.
True.
For the world of Dune.
Arrakis is easy to understand.
Because it's just sand.
Right.
Nothing but sand and heat.
Lots of dunes.
I didn't know that's what a desert was. Way to ruin it. Hashtag
spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Samantha obviously hasn't been to a desert. But
no,
if you go into a world completely unknown.
Yeah.
It is up to the writer to describe the world enough that the reader can follow along and get where they're going.
Well, it's like the Harkonians in Dune, as you bring it up. I mean, the floating fat man. The movie gave it enough of a visual stimulus, because unfortunately I did the reverse way. I watched the movie, then I read the book.
You dumbass.
Well, it actually worked out really nice, because there was a lot of visual stimulus that was a lot easier to understand having watched the movie and see somebody else's interpretation. Having read the book, it's like I see where a couple of details got left out as far as descriptions are concerned. Yeah. But it was enough for me to work with and go, okay, this is how it's a little bit different in the book. I can work with that. No big deal. Moving on. And I like that because that book is descriptive enough. I think one of the problems I run into with sci-fi particularly is how does one write a scene like the city of Blade Runner? How does one go about describing that without filling fucking an entire dictionary worth of shit on just description of a city? You know what I mean?
Here's another interesting thing. Before Star Wars, when sci-fi writers would write, they would describe spacecraft as sleek or bulky or not a lot. Right. So it was really up to the reader. But now that we've had decades of really good sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
when you read a good sci-fi story, you're just filling in whatever ship from whatever sci-fi that you like.
True.
So for me, it's really interesting if a good sci-fi movie gets made from a book to see that interpretation and go, that is not what I imagined.
Yeah.
You know?
That's fair.
Fantasy is another kind of like...
Fantasy is a little bit easier because you're working with natural context, usually.
Usually.
Some sort of landscape is like a forest or a swamp or a meadow or, you know, things like that.
But the world building goes more into what lives in those.
True.
So it's more, you know, developing the societies that you're working with in the fantasy realm.
But even then, you get enough description of the characters and creatures that live within these societies to build you a painted picture. It's like, you mm-hmm. know, fortunately for us, all of us are fairly well aware of, you know, the base five fantasy creatures, you know, dwarf, elf, fucking orc, all the weird fucking...
I don't know what a fucking is.
A fucking? Oh, a fucking is a new one. I came up with that one myself.
So there's six now?
Copyright.
It's like a Kraken, only you enter it instead of it having...
Yes, yes!
Enter the fucking!
Samantha has read my fanfic.
Enter the fucking and release the Kraken.
Yes!
But anyway, it's one of those things where you have your base, you know, creatures that you can work with. It's nice. I think that's why I think I enjoy fantasy more, is it's almost easier to imagine something fantastical in a natural setting as opposed to trying to imagine this grand metropolis where buildings and pipes go in every direction and lights come from all different sources and I don't know what the fuck is going on. It's a little confusing.
See, I would personally, I think it would be easier to write a fantasy story.
Exactly.
Because like you said, there are like five general
races
mm-hmm. in any fantasy.
Yes, I am a racist.
You are.
I'm calling you out, elves.
So when are you starting your job at the Trump administration?
Next week. I'm a part of the elf defamation crew.
Speaking of Trump.
Oh, no. We had a good line going.
And our whole creative story.
No.
Our creative conversation. I'm going to reveal one of the places that I get some of my ideas, and that's from the news.
You poor bastard.
With that in mind, I would like to welcome you to my next creative idea that I really think that we should jump on. I want to do a radio drama called Space Force! The story will take place on the starship Mar-a-Lago under the command of General Captain Admiral Trump.
Oh, no.
General Captain Admiral.
He will be addressed by his full title every time.
Wait, don't forget Chief.
General Captain Admiral Trump.
Yep.
He will be fighting the threat of the Marzikins.
Marzikins.
Protecting the Imperial Wall.
It's starting to sound like Doom.
I got that reference.
Thank you.
The gasoline-filled pool.
Mm-hmm. His entire crew will be made of members of...
Of his family.
Of his family and his White House staff. The first episode, he will be sending Ensign Comey out the airlock.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ensign will not fire the brawny cannon. Mm-hmm. And if you understand that reference, you were on board as a writer.
Can Kellyanne Conway be like a space Martian gargoyle thing?
Wait, she's not already?
No, she is, for sure.
But bum.
I just, you know, I just want to make sure that she's just like, you know, sneaky type, you know.
Nice, Sam. Nice.
And you are hired to play Kellyanne Conway just based on that audition.
I do have a question for you guys, a genuine question. Not trying to derail too hard. But what are your favorite genres of stories? I mean, for reading, writing, enjoying all together, I mean, your top one that you always go to, regardless of your mood or setting.
Samantha, James, you want to
Sam,
jump off?
Brace? I don't care.
I especially lately have really been enjoying, that was my dog that just breathed into the microphone, I've been really enjoying family dramas, whether they're funny or sad, you know, or suspenseful, like Big Little Lies I couldn't put that book down. I've been really liking family dramas lately.
Now, what about writing?
That's harder to nail down because I do a little bit of everything, and especially with the gift of Stark Story Snacks, I can maybe flesh out some of my not-so-great ideas. You know, 1,000 words or less, flash fiction, and I can sort of get them out. But if you have looked at those stories, like my season one is a book, season two is still you can read online, but it will come out and be a book eventually. So those ones are a little bit of everything. I really like dark and sad. So, the first story in each of them are family drama. It's something that is real and actually happened. And then as the season goes, they get more fantasyful. And so my first story, my last story are always my favorite of each season because one is real grounded in reality and the other one's just like one of them is called The Terrible Singing Mermaid and she's, you know, the other one, you know, is about a fairy meeting what looks to be a really scary creature. It turns out not to be. And then that, you know, takes its twists and turns. So, you know.
Fair enough.
Bryce, what about you? What's your favorite genre to read?
Fantasy. Hands down.
Now, are we talking sci-fi fantasy, or are we talking, like, Tolkien-style fantasy? I mean,
Tolkien-style. Yeah, I was going to say, I think sci-fi and fantasy are two separate. Sci-fi is more space and alien worlds, whereas fantasy is more Tolkien.
I've come to find that things like Fallout was really the very first thing that ever told me that there could be a bastard child of the both of them, because that's kind of what Fallout, the game series, is sci-fi fantasy. There are orcs, there's elves, there's goblins, there's ghouls, there's all kinds of weird creatures that live in this world, but it's all based out of science fiction.
Generally speaking, what about to write?
Fiction.
Would you like to be a...
Same style.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's we just okay. had blank stares. We all write fiction. Yeah. I didn't really see you as a documentarian,
Bryce. I do have a journal, but, you know, I'm pretty sure nobody's going to read it.
I write biographies.
Right?
But they're all about him.
See, I write biographies, too, but they're all about my pet goat that I don't have.
I am so punching you in the right testicle.
No, not righty. That's the right one. So James.
My tastes are very varied, but
your number one go-to for reading and enjoyment.
For reading, I tend to go supernatural horror.
Okay.
And I tend when I go with that, I tend to go more religious based.
Okay. So you're
like
much
the
more
Exorcist,
angels and demons kind
yeah.
of. Gotcha.
And as far as writing, sci-fi and fantasy, but the story that I want to write would be a supernatural thriller if I do it right, which I probably won't.
That's fair.
You never know until you try, buddy.
No, I just need to buckle down, sit down, and write it.
And do it.
Yes, that grind. Once I hit that point where I need to start grinding, that's hard. It's hard for me to do.
See, I look forward to that. It's like the only few times that I've ever written It's just that one little fucking section that always screws me up. Every story I've ever written has always had that one spot where it's like, what the fuck do I do now? I know the story, I know where we're going, but I can't really jump into that without having a what the hell just happened. It's like somebody ripped 10 pages out of a book and says, figure it out. It's like, that doesn't work. But once I get past it, oh god, I love that shit, because then I just go.
I think what I need to do is just like set a goal and just go, okay, just write chapter one.
Don't even go that far. Just say 1,000 words a day.
Yeah.
I've heard that too, but if I sit down and write, it's too... essentially to complete. So I can't sit down and just write 1,000 words. I have to sit down and go, okay, this is the chapter, and get the chapter done.
That's fair.
And then I'll go back, I'll give it some time, go back and make alterations and flesh it out and stuff. But gotcha. If I can get like a bare bones chapter.
Yeah, fair enough. I think for me it's a matter of my number one go-to always has been horror of all types. Supernatural, thriller, murder, mystery.
I think
kind
that's
of
just
shit.
Human nature, though. We all like to be scared.
See, and that's the thing. It's
in
like,
a safe way, you know?
But that's the weird part about it. It's like, a lot of the times when I read horror, what I'm looking for is my internal movie. I'm looking for a story that I could soundtrack to. Basically, it's like, one of my favorite books that I've read as of recently was Hell House from Richard Matheson. The movie is garbage. Don't go see it. I'm advising you now. But the book was genuinely fun. It's not a hard read. It's not a long read. But I will say it was one of those things where it was descriptive enough to keep you in pace. It kept you interested as to why the fuck these people are here. What the hell's going on? And the punchlines that came throughout the entire book were genuinely good. The ending was what you'd expect from an older horror movie. A story, but in general, it was really nice to just sit down and read. And it wasn't that it scared me, but it was just like, ooh, I like how he went about that. I like the setup. I like this scene. Okay, that's really fucking gross. That's beautiful. And everything about it, again, it paints that internal movie, and then I start thinking of music that I would have go over the top. And that's what I look for the most. When I read other stories, I mean, like, I loved Harry Potter. I still do. Fuck everybody who has anything else to say. Fight me. but that...
Boy, you're defensive.
That book series in and of itself, though, was just genuinely fun. The Xanth series, the very first book called Spell for Chameleon by Piers Anthony. Super fun fantasy story. Really easy to get through. Genuinely kind of fun. But it didn't get my brain thinking about music. It didn't have me orchestrating anything. It was just fun to read, and I enjoy that. But horror tends to sign off something for me where it's like a creepy scene you know is coming. It's like, okay, let's build the suspense. How would we do that? That stuff is what I live for. I love that. And that's why I've been enjoying stuff like Creepypasta, because, to be fair, it only takes you about 5 minutes to read most of them, and that's about the length of a song. So you could damn near orchestrate the whole fucking thing in about 5 minutes.
God, now I'm hungry, and I want pasta. I can't
figure it. I'm hungry, too, and my dogs have pasta. To get out, so I do have this song off soon.
Well, it's good, because we're about to wrap this thing up. next week, hopefully, fingers crossed, we get Jim back. I want to talk more
Don't jinx it.
About putting together Space Force, the radio drama. I think between the five of us, we could have a lot of fun with that.
Oh,
and
no.
Bryce, I think we could pay tribute to one of our favorite series. No, he can't be on it.
I'm a stowaway.
Yes, he can.
This was my idea to begin with.
Kind of flashback.
Right?
It'll destroy our dreams.
As he drew
out these plans in crayon on the table. You know,
we may have to audition among the five of us, though, who does the best Trump.
Oh, God.
I will concede. I know that it is not me. Besides, I couldn't stand staying in that voice that long.
You could be Vice Admiral Captain Pence.
Okay. I'm going to give him a Herp the Derp voice.
Samantha could be Melania and Kellyanne Conway.
Noice. Noice.
And don't forget about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I'll just make her like Colonel
Huckabee.
You sound like Jodie Foster's character in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
You mean Jodie Foster's character in just about everything.
Yeah, pretty much, but more silent. Did you recently watch that?
No.
He's a Huckabee. You want some fried chicken?
I think you need more balls in your voice, though, to sound like Sarah, because she's down here.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Put some butch in it.
Podcast I listen to.
Did you just go Elvis?
Yeah.
Trump administration drama. It's really funny.
Been reading Bubba.
She's like a deep, like, savage voice. It's really funny.
Nice.
I'll try to find one and send it to you guys.
I'm hoping we can get Melissa McCarthy to appear as Sean Spicer. I've sent a word to her people.
Fun conversations.
He makes it fun for us. Okay, that's it for this episode. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll make you laugh, but probably not.
Probably not. Be prepared for disappointment.
Keep your expectations low. See ya.
Later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.